Hold on. Everybody also knew that George Lucas made a good Star Wars movie.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And here, well, here's the thing, too.
And then Jar Jar Binks.
Right. Here's going back to Lord of the Rings.
Do you want me to do the voice, James?
No.
You're not over it yet still?
I'm still very angry. Hurt.
I mean, I ruined a movie big time.
That's not me. Anyway, that's not me doing that.
No, the
find you and kill you.
Yikes.
Oh, hey, no need to go all Alec Baldwin on Craig there.
Yes, Eric Baldwin.
Okay.
Welcome to Nerd Burger! Episode 15.
Episode 1-5. Here we are. Once again.
Yep. Did you hear that? It's kind of like sounded like some Armenian beard on the...
Yeah, maybe.
Mixed in with the music there.
We'll have to find out.
I wonder why. How's it going, Craig?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
I got the title for my car. That's awesome. I own that thing. Now it's going to break down.
Well, of course. Toyota.
Hey. Toyota's last.
Toyota, if you'd like to sponsor the podcast. Craig liked it so much, he paid it off and kept it.
Yeah, I didn't pay it off and immediately just junk it, give it away, trash it. No. Okay. Well, we've got a guest here, of course. And let's bring him on board again. Hello,
hey.
Hello, James.
Hey.
What's up, Pippi?
How's the beard?
The beard? That was not the beard.
Okay.
What was that?
That was me covering the microphone with my hand because...
Trying not to make any noise?
Well, no, kind of, yeah. Well, there were yelling children and people were, you know, talking in the background, so.
Yeah.
All right.
I love this song.
Oh, sorry.
Well, that's why you chose it as your theme.
It's a great song. You can't run slow.
How long does this go for?
We're about a quarter of the way through it, now we're in Pinky Fair use, and turn it off.
And
is there a time limit for like you can use like a little bit of it but not the whole song?
My understanding is that there's sort of an implied, like, you know, 30 seconds you're good. The big thing is to not ever imply or state that Weird Al Yankovic, you know, is in any way affiliated with this podcast. He doesn't endorse it. He doesn't, you know, nothing.
Although
we do not claim. Yeah, I would hope so. And we don't claim that that's our song or that we sang it or produced it or anything like that. We did not. That was just a song we used for a little bit when James is on the show.
I'm going to claim it.
Oh, thanks a lot.
I'm going to claim that the Nerdburger completely song wrote all the words. The music.
See, you're screwing up because you don't edit the episode. that part's going away.
Oh man,
doesn't want like
I don't know.
Hey,
I left midgets shitting in a bucket last week on accident.
left the S bomb in the episode.
They said shipping. No, shipping in a bucket. Shipping. I thought it was a Kmart thing. They shipped their bucket.
No.
Hey, just to let you know that I'm trying to be all in the nerdy in the spirit of nerdiness, as I was waiting for the podcast to start, I was surfing my new Windows 8 computer, which I hate. I like the computer. I just don't like the operating system. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, I'm on superherostuff.com, looking at really cool, nerdy superhero stuff.
Well, that's cool.
Sweet. While I'm talking to you.
On your Barney Purple computer?
Is it
yes.
Barney Purple?
Yeah, it's pretty purple. It's amazing.
That's okay. My phone's purple.
Yeah.
The cases.
Yeah. It's cool. It works, you know. So, anyway, I thought that was nerd-worthy that I'm looking at flip-flops.
Later this year, Windows is going to try to fix it.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, 8.1. They're bringing back the start button, baby.
They need to. It's awful. Yeah, my work computer has XP on it and
mine too.
Yeah.
Somehow it works just fine.
Mm-hmm.
So does 7. Yeah. Works great on my computer downstairs.
You should downgrade to 7.
Downgrade to 7.
That's not widespread yet like it was with Vista.
Right, where everybody went,
Vista wasn't all that good.
Yeah, but, well, that's my laptop. That's what it had on it, and I downgraded.
We talked about before.
Ooh, they have aprons here with, like, they have a Darth Vader apron, like, you know, for cooking, you know?
It says what?
It looks like Darth Vader's chest. Like, they've got these.
Oh,
okay.
They've got Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman, Captain America.
Did they print stuff on the buttons like broil and
I can't tell. It's a little,
choke.
It's a little choke.
Salt, pepper.
It's not close up the view, but they have Iron Man, Green Lantern. They even have Star Wars Princess Leia in the bikini. Nice.
Do they have one that says like "Kiss the Sith"?
No, they don't. But they do have beer glasses with capes. There's like a Superman like beer mug and a pint glass and a Batman pint glass.
Are those? Do they look like they'd be difficult to hold on to? Or does the cape somehow function as a handle?
I don't know. I think you'd have to like. You get your
fingers up underneath the cape.
I'm kind of the
dirty.
What was the lady from Edna Mode from The Incredibles?
No capes.
No capes. I'm not a fan of the cape. Superhero. Yeah. I'm more of a. I mean,
underwear on the outside of the tights and a mask on the face.
Say again. What'd you say?
So you're more a fan of the wearing the underwear on the outside and having a face mask.
Indeed.
Okay.
Yeah.
some type of utility belt, maybe.
Yes, perhaps.
And of course, a logo on the chest.
You must have a logo on the chest. Absolutely.
Flamboyant colors.
Well, you know, actually, I'm more of a fan of considering the fact that I like the Silver Surfer.
Stretchy fabrics.
And okay. Yeah, colors and fabrics. no, but since I like Ben Grimm, you know, the Thing so much, I mean, basically, mm-hmm. just a pair of underwear will do without any, you know, you don't need a mask. You don't need just a pair of, like, you know, shorts.
So I'm picturing you running around in blue underwear, painted orange, screaming, "It's clobbering time."
I don't even want to picture that. I have a lot. I
have an imagination and it runs away on me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably not something anybody wants to see.
So, I don't know. Mike, you probably have a photo of James somewhere floating around. We could Photoshop up.
Okay.
Not like that. No.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, you just got to put his face on like some male model and paint it orange and put a quote bubble next to him.
Oh, dear.
Let's see. What's up?
What's new, Craig?
What's new? I think it's worth just kind of mentioning this really quickly. We're recording on Sunday, Saturday, June 30th. Do you know what happened?
Saturday, June 29th.
Today's the 30th.
You're right, sorry. June 29th, yesterday. Saturday, anyway. Gary Busey turned 69. We've talked about Gary Busey previously.
Did you get the endocrine system?
No,
thing? But I've been meaning.
But
to
I've
do
got
that.
A whole bunch of acronyms sitting here in front of me.
Oh, awesome. Are we gonna play Guess Gary Busey's acronym?
Well, we can kind of a little bit. What do you think Gary Busey says FART stands for? This is the first one. I didn't choose this just for you, Mike. This is the
James.
First one on the list. Yeah. What does FART stand for?
FART.
Yes.
No idea.
Feeling a rectal transmission. According to Gary Busey.
Is that our episode title?
I don't
Mike's
know.
Mike's reaction to that.
It could be any one of these.
Way funnier than
that one's
Gary
boring.
Busey's acronym.
Oh, I got to tell my dad about that.
Just trying to find another good one. Oh, FAITH?
Yeah?
FAITH stands for Fantastic Adventures in Trusting Him.
Capital H?
Well, it's all capitalized.
Well, here. But...
Sober is a good one. That one I've actually seen him say, like on some clip show or something.
Oh, yeah.
Sober, son of a bitch, everything's real. That's actually not bad.
some of them are pretty entertaining. and clever.
So we've got a link to it. You can go look them up. There's like 15 or 16 of them. Freedom, facing real exciting energy developing out of miracles. What? Oh, poor guy. Anyway, there you go. That's a little taste of Gary Busey. He's almost 70.
Wow.
One more year. So what do you got going on, Mike? What do you got? You got something. You said you had all sorts of stuff.
I do. And I'm trying to, I have some audio and it's not, I gotta hang on.
Should I talk about VHS 2?
Sure. Go ahead. While I fumble James, around with this.
Yes.
Are you a horror movie person?
Not really. There's like only a couple of horror movies that I wouldn't even call them horror movies. That I like that, but I've seen them and I don't feel the need to watch them again. Like I've seen The Reanimator several times and
that's fun,
you know, Herbert West, and it's just really bad. And you know,
yeah, it's ridiculous and gory. And
right. When I was a teenager, I thought that was like a really funny movie.
Own it and I'm 41 years old.
Right. And then Shaun of the Dead's kind of funny, but it's not really a horror movie.
It's a horror. I mean, it's a horror comedy. There's plenty of zombie killing and gore and,
right,
scary
but
stuff.
That's kind of it. I mean, I just don't get the whole like Mike Myers, you know, the guy's walking like
the slasher. Yep. That's kind of its own little subgenre.
You know, he's walking like 1 mile an hour,
and no one can get away from him.
Yeah, yeah, and he's like, I mean, come on. I think I could completely take on that dude. Rue the Day? He came after me.
James, you'd take him down. Yeah, see, lots of people in those movies think that they're going to do that.
But I'm not in a movie.
And they're usually the jock. Well, you know, if you're running into Jason Voorhees, you are. Because the rules have just changed. But there's an anthology series that has started up last year, and it was called VHS. And it's a horror anthology, so it's like four different stories. Short films with a wraparound story. And the wraparound story was crap, and the movies were decent. In the first one, but VHS 2 came out recently, and I watched that. And the wraparound story, once again, is kind of crap. But the four stories were actually, I mean, this is a really solid little set of stories. Two of them, I would say, are kind of average to maybe a little bit better than average, but two of them are really good. They actually tell like a nice, neat little story, and they have the scary moments, and there's some, you know, blood and gore and whatnot for people that look for that kind of stuff. But the two I want to mention, and I'm not going to get into too much spoilery kind of stuff, but there's the second one is called A Ride in the Park. And all of these are found footage stories. So if you hate the shaky cam, you're going to hate this series. Mm-hmm. Because it's everybody's running around with a camera in their hands or, you know, on their head or in their glasses, or they're doing it via laptop webcams, or, you know, it's all recorded by the people.
Right. The only one of those that I could ever tolerate was Cloverfield.
Yeah. But there's one called A Ride in the Park where a guy's going for, he's biking in the park and he's got one of those, I can't remember what they're called, but there's a name for it. But it's the helmet, the camera on the helmet. Mm-hmm. And so it's all through his point of view. And then zombies happen. And this isn't really a spoiler. This is kind of a spoiler. But it's not going to ruin the rest of the movie because it's just kind of the setup to the thing. He gets attacked and killed. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the story is a horror movie from the zombie's point of view as he's going around looking for people.
Oh, with the helmet cam still on.
Right, with the helmet, nice. Helmet cam still on. So he's attacking the people.
Out in front of him.
Yeah, and every so often you catch like his reflection
in stuff.
In things.
And he's all zombified.
It's fun. And then there was one called the third one in the series. It's funny because the first and the last, you want those to be the best, right? I would think. You want to hook him in, have the first story be really good, mm-hmm. and then go out on a high note. But for whatever reason, for my opinion, the second and the third ones were the good ones. The third one was Safe Haven, which was an Indonesian filmmaker made it. And it's the premise is a bunch of, I think they're supposed to be American, documentary makers mm-hmm. go into this, basically they go to interview the leader of a cult. And there's this like doomsday thing that they're setting up for and blah, blah, blah. And while they're there, everything starts to go down. With the cult deciding, okay, it's the end times. Guess what we're doing? And it for a while, it seems like it's just going to be kind of creepy. This weird cult guy and these people that are, you know, brainwashed followers and whatnot. And then it takes this hard left into holy fuck, and it gets awesome. So check it out if you like horror movies. Yeah, it takes a hard turn. Hey, James?
Yeah.
Okay. You're just happily listening because horror movies aren't your thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Well, that's just, I thought I wanted to throw that out there because it's
no, the idea of the zombie's point of view is intriguing. I kind of like that. But is the zombie, like, he's just completely a zombie? He's not sort of a zombie where he's like talking and, you know, making smart ass comments about brains or anything?
Nothing. He's not a Return of the Living Dead zombie. No, not a reanimated head in a pan like in the Reanimator.
Right.
But there's a little bit of other stuff too. I don't want to give it away. There's a little bit of self-awareness, I guess, kind of. But he's not, it's not wacky zombie, you know. But it's from his point of view.
I mean, so, I think it would be funny if his point of view is, you know, he's like, and he's like, hey, come here. You know? Hey, no, really, really. No, no, come here. You
know? Send more paramedics.
A little, yeah. Yeah. Like, hey, I'm not a zombie. No. Like, I'm only kind of a zombie. Come here. I need your help. And then like, oh, I'm a zombie.
Candy Graham. Yeah. You're not a Candy Graham. You're that pesky land shark. No, ma'am. I'm a dolphin. Anyway, so what do you got, Mike?
Well, first of all, do you know what's on tonight?
What's on tonight? True Blood's on tonight, Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what else is on tonight?
But no.
Look down at your shirt.
Oh, it's back. Oh, crap. I wasn't.
I wondered because I hadn't heard anything from you.
I'd lost track of it.
That's right. Dexter is on tonight.
Sweet.
Not September. It's on tonight in June.
Cool.
Yeah, they bumped it up apparently months ago. They announced it.
Okay. That's
you know how I found out?
How close of attention I've been paying.
Guess how I found out?
Michael C. Hall called you.
No, my 63-year-old mother told me about it.
Oh, jeez.
She's like, oh, Dexter. So are you excited to watch the Dexter?
Are you going to watch the Dexter tonight?
And I'm like,
Sonny?
I'm like, Mom, it's not on until September. No, it's on this Sunday. I'm like, what?
I read it in the TV guide.
Pretty much, yeah. So.
All right. Crap. Now I got to figure out what I'm going to watch, Dexter or True Blood. Because they're probably on at the same time.
Nine?
Yep.
Yep. So there's that. Crap. And then.
First world problems. Figure out which premium cable channel awesome TV show I want to watch and which one I want to save for the next day.
Yep. And then there's this. Uh-oh. Speaking of people running around in their underwear.
Do you know how much I make a year? I mean, even if I told you, you wouldn't believe it. You know what would happen if I suddenly decided to stop going to work? A business big enough that it could be listed on NASDAQ would go belly up, disappears, it ceases to exist without me. No, you clearly don't know who you're talking to. So let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No, I am the one who knocks.
So, well, that was Gilbert Gottfried
doing Walter White's doing One Who Knocks monologue.
Okay, where the hell did that come from?
The inner tubes. Just
happened to find it.
Yeah. Twitter. He tweeted
hey,
it.
I got to tell you something.
Yes.
I didn't hear any of that on my end.
Oh.
Not.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Sorry.
I just, you know, I don't think I have to hear it. It doesn't sound like something I want to hear.
Oh, geez. So is that his thing now? He's not doing comedy anymore. He's just reciting. Maybe he'll do the no capes.
Well, James, you can speech. Listen to the episode and then you can hear it.
Okay. That sounds like a good idea.
No capes. No, none. No capes. And he's going to do the whole. And then they'll montage of Gilbert getting his cape caught in a revolving door and getting sucked into a jet plane engine. And
The Incredibles is the best movie
ever. It's good.
It's probably my favorite movie.
I saw something a while back that Edna's speech about capes was listed amongst like the top 10 animated monologues or whatever. Animated movie monologues.
No capes.
I have more news.
Okay. Is this news news?
Yes, it's news news. Well, the Dexter thing was news news to you. Dateline, somewhere in Technologyville. AT&T's mobile chief, we've sold out of the Facebook phone.
Oh, excellent.
That's right. We're talking about Facebook Home again.
Oh, boy.
The other reason they sold out is because they gave it away for free. to sum things up.
I don't think they're using that word right.
So the HTC First wasn't a complete disaster after all. This is from CNET. AT&T managed to get rid of most of its inventory, according to AT&T Mobility CEO Ralph De La Vega.
They gave it away and they're calling that selling out.
Yeah. The move to a 99-cent price tag helped spur sales of the Facebook phone. Well, duh. Which struggled to catch on with consumers. Quote, we sold a bunch more when we lowered the price. CEO Ralph De La Vega said in an interview on Monday.
Capitalism 101.
We sold everything we had on that. Good for you. It's unclear how many HTC First phones AT&T had in its inventory, and the company wouldn't discuss the actual number.
Well, here's the thing.
Companies tend not to discuss embarrassing numbers.
Sure, but if it was 99 cents that they sold it for, you could find out how much they made, and that would be roughly the number of phones that they sold.
Mm-hmm. Even if AT&T has sold out of the phone, it's by no means a success, blah, blah, blah. And it just goes on to explain how nobody wanted it. And there were rumors it was discontinued. And apparently those were true because they're all gone. And, it was a success and nothing to see here.
Speaking of technology companies going, oops, we really screwed that up, didn't we? You're not really a video game guy, but maybe James, you've heard about this,
mm-hmm.
The PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One.
Those would be the new consoles?
The new consoles. They made big announcements, both of them here recently. PlayStation 4, everybody, wow, awesome, all this cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Xbox One came out, and they had a bunch of different things attached to it. Basically, one of the things they wanted to do was you have to have an active internet connection in order to play a game at all.
Because
you have to ping the internet constantly.
And they're doing that now?
Hold on. They said there was that. There was, what were some of the other things? To sell a game to someone, you have to have been quote unquote friends or know them, you know, whatever, through Xbox Live. You have to have known them for at least a month. You can't actually just sell your physical disc to somebody. There was just all this screwed up stuff. A few weeks later, redacted half of what they were doing, completely changed their marketing strategy or their strategy for the game. And it's $100 more expensive. So yeah. So all the people who live with, you know, who just don't have internet connections, don't care to have one, don't have, or they just have a, you know, a dial up or something really slow or whatever. No, you don't get to play our games.
No, yeah.
We're just going to screw you out of playing all these awesome Xbox games. The internet caught onto it pretty quickly and people started calling it, it's XB1 is what the thing, you know, the logo says. So it became X-Bone. Like how badly they boned it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It sounds kind of pornographic to me.
And then when they redacted and changed all this stuff, it became Xbox 180.
that's good stuff.
The internet is so witty.
I was just reading something, and it wasn't about this, but just people, somebody being critical about the idea of this ubiquitous, always on internet that supposedly is coming and never seems to get here, and all these companies basing their strategies off of this fictitious,
right,
nonstop pipeline that, you know, like
that everybody in the world is hooked into,
right?
No matter what, everybody's hooked into it at a high speed all the time,
yeah.
Which is not the case.
No,
that links into you hear Lucas and Spielberg making their comment about how the movie theater is going away.
Nuh-uh.
That the movie theater experience. Everybody watches stuff at home. Everybody streams. Everybody this and that. You know that
everybody
in the world does that.
Right.
So.
Yeah, how many gazillions of dollars did Man of Steel pull in its first weekend?
Yeah, and
all those people that supposedly are staying home.
Right. But this is the thing that they're trying to sell us on the idea now, and I think more people are going to start doing this too, is that the movie theater experience is going to become like the theater or opera experience, where you pay $50-$100, you get a whole bunch of free stuff, you get a digital copy of the movie the day that you go to see it in the theater, all this, you know, and freebie this and that and trinkets and all this kind of crap. And it becomes like this big, you know, experience.
I do that
rather than just going to see the movie. And they're saying, you know, the people who the people who went to see Superman right when it came out are the people who are going to pay $100 to see Superman. As
I would pay $100 to see a movie that I really wanted to see in the theater if the fact that the tickets were $100 and no offense, James, kept people with kids out of the theater.
Oh, I agree, man. I'd take if I take my kids to the theater, it's like the $2 movie, and it's a kids movie.
It's a kids movie where you would expect to see a bunch of kids.
Yeah, we went and saw The Croods, and you know, with the cavemen.
Oh, and, sure.
That was the last movie I saw in the theater.
So I'm going to go on the record right now. I'm going to put this on the internet forever.
Okay,
and you can hold me to this. 10 years down the road, I will never go to that type of movie going experience.
Really?
Ever? No. Screw that.
Okay.
I am perfectly fine with sitting for 2, maybe 3 months and waiting for it to come out on DVD or Netflix.
Especially
or
now
else.
That it's the time between leaving the theater and coming on a DVD. I mean, God, it's like a month in some cases, isn't it? It seems like that there's almost no time anymore. Right. No delay.
Well, here's the thing. You know, get all the little trinkets and stuff. Who cares? I don't care about a keychain or some little goofy this or that.
Like I said, if it's a big event movie, you know.
No, I wouldn't even do that.
You wouldn't even do that?
No, screw it.
Like, if they made Ghostbusters 3, I might go see that.
No, because I don't know what's going to be. I'm not going to pay $100 for a movie that I don't know how it's going to, if it's going to suck or not.
The next Hobbit. I would do that for the Hobbit movies.
Go to see, because, I mean, you're already gambling. You're going to spend $20 to go to a movie and get, you know, a popcorn and a drink while you're there, and then the time to get there and back and whatever else, and planning it to arrange, you know, and then you go and you watch the movie and it's 2 hours long and it's terrible. Okay, now do that with a $100 movie.
Yeah.
How you going to feel after the first time you spend $100 on a movie that you didn't like?
Yeah, but you know that The Hobbit's not going to be terrible.
Well, we didn't know that. Okay, you know what? Fine. There's going to be 2%, maybe 1% of movies that are going to have that kind of cachet behind them. Everybody knows Peter Jackson makes a good Lord of the Rings movie.
Yeah.
And that they're going to go to that. Okay, well, what about
everybody? Everybody also knew that George Lucas made a good Star Wars movie.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and here's the thing, too.
And then Jar Jar Binks.
Right. Here's going back to Lord of the Rings.
Do you want me to do the voice, James?
No.
You're not over it yet, still?
I'm still very angry. Hurt.
I mean, I ruined a movie big time. I got
that's not me.
Anyway,
that's not me doing that.
No, the
find you and kill you.
<let's go>. Yikes!
Oh, hey, no need to go all Alec Baldwin on Craig there.
Yes, Eric Baldwin.
Okay. But going back to Lord of the Rings, Mike. Previous to Lord of the Rings,
yes.
Let's say you are a big Tolkien fan. Did you read Tolkien?
No.
Okay, so but let's say you were somebody who wanted to see The Lord of the Rings on the big screen.
Okay.
Would you have gone to see that movie, knowing nothing about Peter Jackson and the types of movies that he makes, only knowing what you know about Peter Jackson from what he had previously done?
Now,
would you have paid $100 to see that movie?
Would I have seen previews of the movie?
Yeah, you'd see trailers.
Yeah, no, I mean, I knew it was a big deal when it came out.
I could chime in.
Yeah, but would you pay $100 to see that movie, not knowing anything about Peter Jackson?
If it came out
now? Knowing
that
the movie was going to be 3 hours long.
If it came out now.
Right.
When
and you don't know anything about Peter Jackson other than that he made Heavenly Creatures and Meet the Feebles.
Okay, that's fine. If did it come out now, in my life now, where I can afford to go spend $100 on a movie, and not when I was in college when I couldn't afford to spend $100 on a movie.
Right now, when you got
yes, I would go see it.
Wow. Not me. Screw it. $100 for a movie? No way.
Okay.
I might pay. I don't know that I'd pay $100, but I would pay a lot of money to see Heavenly Creatures in the movie theaters again. Because I saw it, in its full CinemaScope, thing, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, so when The Lord of the Rings was coming out, it was like Peter Jackson was doing it. I was like, this is. And I'm not like a big, you know, movie buff or anything, but Heavenly Creatures was such a good movie. I knew that, and I am a Lord of the Rings fan. I read all the books and everything, so I would spend a lot of money on seeing Lord of the Rings.
You'd gamble $100 on the movie being good.
Well, I have a wife and kids now.
Well,
so
right,
you can't really do that.
Well, okay, let's say you don't have the kids; it's just you and the wife. You'd gamble $200 on that movie being good, knowing nothing about Peter Jackson other than the previous movies he had made, and you've seen two trailers, two different trailers.
Probably not that much money.
after you saw the first one at home on DVD or streaming or whatever, and then maybe you go see the next one.
Okay.
You think, hey, this guy knows what he's doing.
Let me put it this way. $100, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I went and saw Rush in concert for the first time about a month and a half ago or a month ago, and I regret it.
Wow, really?
I love Rush, but for $100, I could have just, listen. I could have spent.
You could have bought that on something else. You could have bought 10 albums,
and they played like a bunch of their new stuff, which that's kind of a thing when you go see a band. They're like want to play all their new stuff. And you don't want to listen to their new stuff. You want to listen to the stuff that reason, the classic rock aspect of their music. So I just kind of veered off here on a tangent, I've always wanted to see Tom Waits, and I guess this is how I have to equate it, not so much movies but concerts. Like, I wanted to see Tom Waits. I've always wanted to see Tom Waits. I had a chance to go see Tom Waits, but the tickets were $100.
Ouch.
And I was like, nah, I'm not doing that. But now, in retrospect, I wish I would have spent the $100 because I still want to see Tom Waits. So right. I could have checked that block. You know what I mean? I could have been like, yeah, I saw Tom Waits. It was awesome. And my friend said it was, he went and saw him and he said it was amazing. So there you go.
So for $20, are you going to drive to Chapel Hill?
Yeah, that's the plan.
So you are going?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't like set anything in stone or bought tickets or done anything, but okay. I mean, yes, that's my intent, is to go see Superchunk in Chapel Hill.
Okay. All right. Well,
since we couldn't do the hippie freaking Grateful Dead follow our favorite band around for a week, so there you go.
All right. Well, because Allison wants to go, so I need to plan.
How about you guys make your plans off the podcast? Do you want to discuss times?
Oh, we're ruining the podcast.
Oh yeah, exactly. All right. I never say anything that ruins the podcast. Quick aside, getting back to the whole movie thing and $100 for movies and all this.
Yeah.
Then there's another thing that came up that I saw that people are, do you think trailers show you too much?
I don't really watch them.
Okay. Well, you're useless.
I think James. They do show you. Yes. I think they show you, like some of them you can tell that, okay, they just showed us all the best parts. Yep. Of the movie.
And
I've noticed that with comedies.
That's the concern now, is that right? You see
you see all the funny stuff.
You see the funniest bits in the trailer.
So you go to the movie expecting to see 10 times that much stuff, and then nope, that was it.
Yeah, and then you just paid $100 to go see that movie.
I wouldn't go see that kind of movie.
Okay. Because I mean, I made the comment a little while back. They're doing Carrie again.
Yeah.
With Chloe Grace Moretz. Who's the girl who was Hit Girl?
Oh, okay.
Playing Carrie. And, people our age, we've seen the original Carrie, or we know the story or read the book or whatever. There's a lot of people now who don't necessarily know the story. They know Carrie's a girl who kills a bunch of people. That's about as far as, their understanding of the story goes. The trailer tells the entire story in order.
Great.
Every significant scene in the book, anyway, is in the trailer in the correct order.
Great. It tells you exactly what's going to happen. You don't need to see anything.
Yeah,
about
I just saw a minute and a half short film entitled Carrie, and it showed me the whole thing.
Carrie condensed for your convenience.
Yeah. So that's the whole movie thing. The one that I always fall back on is Independence Day, regardless of the virus, computer virus issues at the end, where we can't assume that the aliens use the same operating system that we do and whatnot, but. What was the showpiece in the trailer for Independence Day? What's on the box for the DVD and the
tape, White House exploding?
Tape? Yep. Oh, the White House is going to explode. Mm-hmm. So you start watching the movie, and you already know one of the coolest things that's going to happen in the movie. Mm-hmm. The thing that would have been really powerful and like, wow,
right,
to see if you hadn't known it was coming. And on top of it, there is a literal countdown to that scene in the movie.
Yeah.
As soon as Jeff Goldblum points out that his laptop is counting down, it is a countdown to that moment. Yeah. And it just floors me that they...
So not only do you know what's going to happen, you know exactly when it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So you know to take your bathroom break now. Yeah, exactly. When the counter is still at 5 minutes.
When they all start running through the White House. and the ship above is going... And the lights are coming on. So yeah. Way to go, movie trailers. I've been trying to watch less of them too. I've realized, I think I did it subconsciously. I just don't go to Apple Movie Trailers as often as I used to. I'd rather just take the leap of faith occasionally.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Do we want to finish up the news first?
Okay, what do you got?
I got one more.
Okie dokie.
Dateline, Waukesha, Wisconsin.
Waukesha.
Waukesha? Yeah.
No, that's a girl.
If you'd like.
That's a girl's name. Waukesha. For those listening and not knowing Wisconsin, Waukesha is just barely west of Milwaukee.
Yep.
It's right there.
A man who was caught last year having sex with a couch discarded on a Wisconsin street pleaded guilty this afternoon to a public lewdness charge.
Okay.
During a hearing in Waukesha County Circuit Court, Gerard Streeter, 47, copped to a misdemeanor charge stemming from September's illicit curbside encounter.
When you said Gerard, I was like, I know a Gerard. Briefly, for a microsecond in my head, I was like, hope it's not that guy.
We worked with a guy named Gerard.
Yeah, Gerard, if you're listening, good on you.
Yeah.
No, couch sex, literally.
And how awesome is it for you that Craig suspected for a split second that you might be this
guy? I didn't suspect, I feared.
Yeah. Hey, you got to see this guy's picture, and James, I'm sorry you're not here. Now, is that not the, like, if you were in central casting looking for guy who has sex with couch.
Okay, hold it. Let's be. I'll just make a little more work for you. You've got the call sheet in front of you for the people that you're casting today. Says couch fucker, male, mid 40s, balding.
Yeah, crossed eyes, creepy.
Yeah, that's him.
Why? How?
Well, would you like me to continue reading?
Sure. Yeah, I need to know more about this person. Okay. And the couch. I mean, maybe the couch is pretty hot.
Well, that's a hot couch there.
Oh, the floral pattern on that couch.
Here's the question.
It's corduroy.
Was it a big, huge, flush, big, huge, like, fluffy couch?
I don't think they
Or was it a little thin kind of Davenport looking
thing? Just wait.
Because then he's, well, is he like a chubby chaser couch?
At some point, they jokingly refer to it as a love seat.
Oh.
But I don't think it actually was a love seat.
See, that's just...
According to a criminal complaint sworn by a Waukesha City Police Department officer, Streeter's 11 p.m. furniture tryst was interrupted by an off-duty cop out jogging. Officer Ryan Edwards reported spotting, quote, a subject leaning over the couch, facing down, and it looked like he was having sexual relations with someone on the couch. Edwards added that he, quote, could see the male's hips thrusting up and down on the couch. When Edwards approached and yelled, what are you doing? Streeter dismounted the love seat and ran away. That's where they refer to it as a love seat. As the suspect fled, Edwards reported he, quote, could see that the defendant's penis was erect. The officer concluded that Streeter, who was alone, had been thrusting his pelvic area against the cushions and trying to sexually gratify himself by rubbing his penis between the two cushions. So there you go, James, you asked. Giggity, giggity.
Wow.
You asked specifically how that was happening, and they were happy to oblige us.
That reminds me, the other day I was looking at the news.
Okay, and, that reminds you of something.
It does. Because you said, like, the cop was, like, jogging by or something, right? It's like people who do this stuff have the worst luck. You know, there's always, like, a cop that was like,
well, he was doing it outside.
It's never like a cop, it's
11 o'clock at night.
It's not the worst luck, though. Do you think this is the first time he screwed a couch?
Maybe.
No, it's the first time he got caught screwing a couch.
Right. Okay, well, anyway.
Well, it was a good run of luck there. 47 years of couch f***ing in the outside. First time I got caught.
Well, the other day I saw something on the news. It was a man and a woman on a park bench having sex, apparently. And the woman was really, really fat and ugly, which, you know, I thought was rather bizarre. But
allegedly.
I saw the picture. They had the mugshots. I was like, okay. Oh,
hey, that's my bait.
You got proof.
Dear God, you know. but 25 cops rode by on bicycles. Like, there were some, like, police officer bicycle training, like bicycle cop training, and so 25 cops on bicycles were, like, riding through this park all at the same time. So this couple was arrested by 25 cops.
Oh, I was waiting to see if, like, they all sort of, like, stopped and everybody looked at each other like, okay, who's gonna go over there and deal with this?
Well, I don't know. I'm sure that probably actually happened. I'm sure they're probably just, like, all pulled up and, you know, get their little bike tires skidding.
Get the new guy, whoever's newest.
Yeah. All right, Junior. You know.
Did they have a couple of tandem bikes? How did they get him back to the police station?
They radioed for a paddy wagon. I don't know.
Paddy wagon.
Oh.
Okay.
Well, anyway, so the Streeter guy was ordered to pay $243 in court cost, directed to maintain absolute sobriety, and barred from possessing pornography of any kind.
Oh, that's going
to
work.
Does he have to go around
how
to...
How
does he have to go around? Well, to him, pornography could just be a catalog.
Crate and Barrel. Right.
Does he have to go around to everybody in his neighborhood and identify himself?
I guess in Waukesha, it would be, oh, Steinhoffels. Oh, jeez. Well, it's a big furniture store in Waukesha.
All right.
Okay. So that was news.
All right, what's up next?
I don't know.
Are we going to?
Gee, I don't know. What are three architects going to talk about on a nerdy show about TV and movies? Hey, I got an idea.
Okay, what's that idea? Spontaneously, not pre-planned for months.
How about we talk about how TV and movies get the portrayal of architects so wrong and sometimes right?
And this actually came up on our radio program, the one that Mike and
we
I
have
listen
a radio
to.
Program.
No, the one that we listen to. They actually were talking about how TV and movies don't get radio studios.
Correct.
Right. Like how people in radio studios function. Mm-hmm. But I was like, that's kind of funny. They suddenly busted out with that. So James, you're an architect as well.
Indeed.
In fact, that's how you and Mike met. Right.
In school.
And then Mike and I met through work. And then you and I also
although it was
together.
Not architecture that brought us together.
Well, it's how we met.
Me and James.
James. Okay.
We met in school, but it was Superchunk that brought us together.
Oh, Superchunk. Okay. Well, see, that's the thing. You and I met at work, but it was watching Hilton die in House of Wax that truly forged the friendship.
Metal pole through the skull. Oh, good times.
So, what do architects, or what does TV and film get wrong about architects and architecture?
Oh, God, where do we start?
Well, pick something.
Well, actual blueprints. Nobody uses those.
Nobody uses blueprints anymore. If there's blueprints, it's because that's all there is of some really old building.
Right. Anyone actually drawing with a pencil or a pen on a drafting board, that doesn't happen. It's all done in computer, and it's all printed out.
On white paper with
black lines.
I was cleaning out my garage yesterday, and I found a T-square. And I was just like, do I throw it away? What do I do with this thing? Like, do I keep it?
I come across T-squares all the time, and I don't know what to do with them. I think they've all migrated down to the basement. There might be one. There's one. There's one right there.
Well, that's a big ruler.
Oh, it's a big ruler? I thought there was a T-square. Anyway.
T-squares, triangles.
Yeah.
All your little circle and arc templates and toilet room.
little green plastic.
Yeah. I still got all that stuff floating around in a box somewhere. I don't know why.
I have rolls and rolls of paper and Mylar and foam core. And
there's foam core up there. Yeah, there's a bunch of architecture stuff right up there. You should take a photo of one of your designs and put it on the website. That's all stuff from school, I assume.
That's crap from school.
Yeah.
Yeah, scumbags. Mm-hmm. Inside joke. Not talking about people.
Okay. So... the one that I like to point out for people to get the ball rolling and ruin people's experiences at movies, because I've done this to Dave, who was on the show.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I told him how people can't crawl through ductwork.
Oh.
And now he's like, I see that in movies and TV all the time, and it totally tears me out of the story, because I'm like, that person can't do that.
Yeah, there's no such thing as load-bearing ductwork. It's glorified tinfoil, people.
I beg to differ.
You can't crawl through it.
I'm sorry, I have to
be. In extreme cases, there are. But in your usual office building where that kind of stuff happens.
Where the spy is sneaking into the place or whatever.
Yeah, but you got to remember, in the movies, where they're sneaking into a lot of the time is like some top secret government building where everything's built to military specs. So, you know... ductwork has to be able to withstand a nuclear blast, so it's pretty sturdy.
So if it's a military building, it's reasonable.
I don't know.
You're just making that up.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
you had me for a minute, and I work in the field.
Buildings all the time.
Well,
so.
No, I mean, in like big high rises, there might be big plenums of space between floors that serve as air circulation, and people could crawl around in that. But your typical, you know, the person crawling through a duct that is clearly, you know, metal top, bottom, and sides, and they can actually crawl on their hands and knees with their head up and have, you know, 8 inches of clearance above their heads, that doesn't happen. Ducts are, you know, 16, 18, 20 inches.
Unless you're right next to the air handler. Right. The duct's not going to be that big.
Right. The closer you get to the air handler. But
no, but when you're out over just fields of offices.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you're lucky if you could fit your leg into the duct
in some at of that them,
point. Yeah.
But I pointed out,
like, flex duct.
Yeah.
Is that strictly, are we talking about we're not just talking about architects and how architects are portrayed, but it's general construction BS.
Yeah.
Both. Yes.
All that stuff. Sure. Mm-hmm. There's Die Hard when John McClane is in the elevator shaft and he's getting shot at, and he kind of swings himself over and he gets into a duct that empties into an elevator shaft.
Yeah.
Because ducts do that all the time. And by all the time, we mean they never do.
Well, maybe that was a really clever mechanical engineer that was utilizing the elevator shaft as a part of the HVAC system.
No.
Giant vertical trunk.
No. No, because then he's missing something right at the entrance to that duct.
Yeah.
Because that fire elevator damper. Shaft has to be fire rated so that they can close the thing off completely to prevent the smoke and fire from traversing from floor to floor.
Damper or something.
Yeah, but nobody ever has to disassemble the damper to get through it. A damper is a big louver, a bunch of metal slats.
No, the only time you ever see anything like that, it's in one of the larger than human sized round giant air ducts with a big fan that's spinning wildly, and you have to somehow disable the fan so you can crawl between the blades.
Yeah, by sticking a screwdriver into the edge of it and catching the blade.
Right.
And the motor on that fan, if it's that big of a fan, is just going to kick that screwdriver back out and put your eye out.
Yeah.
Especially if that fan's spinning as fast as they sometimes show them to be spinning. Although in Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle, Kumar actually is crawling through a duct and he's really squeezed in there tight and he breaks it. He busts the straps off and it falls into the floor. You know, it falls to the floor and he has to get himself out of it. So they kind of did it right there. They made a joke out of it anyway.
All right. So I know you've got a lot of material, and they've helped out by giving us a lot of material. How I Met Your Mother.
Well, sure.
The main character is an architect. Supposedly is an architect, although he's no architect anyone, you know, in real life has ever met. James, do you watch that show?
I've seen, you know, I'm probably really the wrong person for this kind of stuff because I just watch the news all the time.
Sure.
But just to veer off on one thing I think is, because I've seen that show and I've seen other shows, it's always the model. There's always somebody carrying a freaking model of a building.
Yeah. Big physical models.
And it's not just TV shows like How I Met Your Mother, but it's like every 10th commercial for something. If it's like an office, like whether it's a phone system or a computer, like, you know, we're good for your small business. And it's like the architecture firm is the generic business that suits everybody for any
because of course the architecture firm is going to be super fancy inside and have all kinds of high end finishes and super great architecture.
Right.
And everybody's going to be, you know, dressed really nicely, and they're going to have great fancy stuff and computers and
But they're always working on a
absolutely not model. The case. Yeah.
And they're like, it'll be like a guy gets on the subway with a model and some skinhead crushes the model or something. Or
jeez.
Like, I've seen that commercial.
Okay, I believe you.
And then there's, you know, the guy gets on an elevator and he's got a model and the elevator gets crowded or whatever. But it's like the model is like the joke, you know? Or it's just every architect is walking around with some kind of like snazzy model that he built to show the client this building. And typically
in 2013.
Yeah, typically, the client doesn't even want to pay for a 3D model on a computer, let alone
a physical model.
Well, here's the thing. Maybe 25 years ago, showing off a really cool physical model was the way to wow the client. Now you want to wow the client? You give them a 3D walkthrough, fully rendered on the computer.
Yeah.
Although they do the model joke on How I Met Your Mother. That's how Ted attains his highest position, basically, within the firm, is he... there's a design for a building, and he's building the model. He's stuck building the model, and it looks like a giant penis.
And oddly enough, who is playing the architect who designed that giant penis?
Bryan Cranston. Was playing Hammond Druthers. Mm-hmm. The a-hole, like a-hole project architect guy that Ted can't stand. He's kind of jag. And then Ted, of course, presents his design, because the client looks at it and says, that looks like a big dong. And Ted presents his design that he's been working on his own, and it's basically
just a shot.
It's an exterior rendering.
Exterior perspective.
Of this building that he's designed, and he gets hired, and they get the job. And Ted becomes the youngest project manager the firm has ever had, and da-da-da, and is like...
The youngest person to build a skyscraper ever.
Yeah. Well, the thing that kills me is that, first of all, he does it by just showing, oh, this is what the outside of the building is going to look like.
Right.
And the client says, oh, that's beautiful.
Hey, it doesn't look like a giant dick.
But does the client say, okay, well, tell me how the spaces are laid out. Have you accounted for everything in our program list?
Right.
Have you done all of your code research? What's the budget? Can we build this thing? What are we going to value engineer out?
Well, first of all, we're gonna VE the giant orb-like entrances there at the base.
Okay, that's
surrounded by the brunette shrubbery.
That's the penis building. That's not Ted's building. And then he becomes the youngest. And I specifically looked it up.
Yeah.
They refer to him as the youngest project manager in the firm's history.
Okay.
If he was a great designer, the last thing you would do is make him a project manager.
Yeah.
Because that is the opposite end of the spectrum in the design world. He's going to be neck deep in dealing with clients and budgets and schedules and all this crap. And so if he's that good of a designer, that's all they're going to have him do is design.
Mm-hmm. Make those fancy renderings.
Yep.
And let somebody else figure out how to squeeze the program in and do it.
And do it on budget.
And on time. Hey, yeah.
You do all the coordination with all the consultants and do the site visits and everything else.
Yes, James.
You know what I just thought of as far as TV, architects on TV, the old Monty Python skit.
Okay.
Where you know,
yeah. The block of flats. The block of flats.
Oh, yeah, and he's like, so get on the moving sidewalk.
Speaking of a great model.
Towards the rotating knives.
Past murals depicting Mediterranean scenes towards the rotating knives. The blood collects in the... Excuse me, did you say knives? Rotating knives, yes. Are you suggesting we slaughter our tenants?
Yeah,
does that not fall in your plans?
Yeah.
Yes, I mainly design abattoirs.
Yeah.
Slaughterhouses.
Yeah.
It's a really good slaughterhouse.
Yeah, it has murals depicting Mediterranean
scenes. So he was like the British Mike Brady of slaughterhouses. Everything he designed looked like a slaughterhouse, even if it was just a block of flats.
Well, Mike Brady in the movies.
In the movies, yeah.
Everything he designs looks like their house.
You know, they've been rerunning the Brady Bunch on it's like Hallmark Channel or mm-hmm. one of those. And they must have DVDs out because it's remastered. And
now,
it looks nice and everything.
Does Mike Brady work for...
He
worked for a firm, but he would occasionally work from home. That's why he had the drafting table.
Well, yeah, he had his office.
Right. Okay. So, but he did work for a firm. He wasn't actually just Mike Brady architect.
No, not that I
working on his own.
No, because he always. What was his boss's name? Mr. Something.
Druthers.
I have no idea.
No.
But because Ted on How I Met Your Mother eventually quits that job and opens his own shop
right.
out of his apartment.
Fails miserably and takes a job as a professor.
Well, we'll get to that. But the kicker was he opens up his own office, and then all we ever see him doing again is designing the outside of, the outside of the building.
Yeah.
Now he's running his own shop. Not only does he have to deal with all the interior of the building and figure out, budget and cost and scheduling this and that and making sure the program is covered and dealing with the clients. Now he has to also do all of his own code research. Where's his library of books? Where's his material samples so that he can pick
out
finishes?
How come we never see him writing specs?
He never does any spec writing. But he hires his little assistant guy. Now that brings another aspect into it. Not only has he started his own company, therefore he's probably incorporated and he's had to learn all the things you need to do in order to do that. Now he's learned the next step up on that, which is how to have employees and deal with benefits and salaries and all this kind of stuff. So how does he have time for dating?
Or
hanging out at the bar all the time, designing a building that looks like a cowboy hat.
Pining after Robin.
Well, this is a little further down the road.
Yeah.
And then,
no,
he,
but, uh,
And then he becomes a professor, something that you can do with a bachelor's degree.
Yeah.
In no university ever.
No.
Anywhere. Except maybe Afghanistan.
did they establish that he had only a bachelor's degree?
Well, they never established that he has anything more than that.
Okay.
And to become a, I mean, I guess you can, some schools you can be an adjunct professor with.
I think they'll let you, you know, be, they'll let you start teaching as an associate professor, an right, adjunct and or whatever, as long as you're working toward your master's or your repeat. Your
and PhD. He might have called himself a professor, and the kids call him professor, but his technical title might be just lecturer,
right.
Or guest, you know, guest lecturer or something. But probably if he's going to be a real full on professor, he needs a PhD.
Yeah.
More than likely. And given how douchey that Ted is with all things kind of intellectual, if yeah. he had a PhD.
It's pronounced encyclopedia.
And reciting some sonnet or some poem in the original Italian at the douche party.
Yeah.
When everybody else went to see Robots versus Wrestlers.
And they saw Ted's doppelganger.
Yeah. And all the time.
James is like, what?
And all the time that he's. And all the time that he's. Been hanging around with them and how douchey he gets about intellectual stuff. He's never pointed out to anybody that he has a PhD.
Right.
Or that he has a master's degree.
Which so, he would have if he did.
Well, he'd have to, if he was an architect, if he was going to, you know, be a licensed architect, he would have to have a professional degree, which right. is either a 5-year bachelor's or a master's. Anyway.
No, but getting back to the Brady Bunch.
Brady Bunch.
So I rewatched the pilot episode.
Okay.
Which if,
where the dog was still on the show.
Well, the dog was Tiger. On the show into the second season, actually.
Yeah, then he just kind of disappeared at one much. Point.
But no, this was the wedding.
Oh, sure.
And you saw...
The dog knocks over the cake or whatever. The dog starts running around.
Yeah, there's a big catastrophe. The dog chases Fluffy the cat, the girl's okay. cat, and ruins the wedding. And Carol and Mike end up with the cake on them sure. on the ground, and they laugh, and ha-ha-ha, it's all funny. And that occurs at Carol's parents' house, where she and the girls are living, because she is divorced.
Right.
Mike is a widower.
Right.
Right. He's still living.
He killed his wife.
He killed his wife. That's right. And the boys helped him dig the hole, which is why the backyard is papered over with AstroTurf.
The Brady Bunch just got really dark.
No, but they're in a completely different house. Right. It's his house that he designed, but it's a completely different house. And it's actually nice. Like it's all white. And flat roofed and mid-century modern, and it's got nice furniture in it, and it's not all orange
it's not
and
that,
green and
it's
70s-ified.
Not that incredibly 19 late 60s, early 70s look.
No, it's more 50s, 60s. Like okay. I said, mid-century modern. It's actually nice.
Why didn't they live there?
I don't know. I don't know
not
why they changed it.
Not
enough.
Because
that's what
color.
Happens when you get married.
Says married guy.
You have to compromise. Meaning you don't get your way ever.
Well, no, they had to come up with that was a one-story house, and they needed to have that big grand staircase with that split level. Yet
well,
it
sure.
has four levels somehow.
Well, they also. Wanted a nice set. They yeah. wanted a yeah, big space.
Mm-hmm.
I just met a guy named Peter Brady.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he was on my team on this last bit of training I went to. He was just like, yes, my name is Peter Brady.
Does his voice ever crack?
No.
Does he eat pork chops and applesauce?
Pork chops and applesauce. Very nice.
Possibly. I don't know.
Does he have a doppelganger, like a guy that looks like his twin that happens to work in the office next door, and he has him come over and they switch outfits? So that they can date two different girls at the same time?
Jeez. I don't know. I just knew that his name was Peter Brady. He was an infantry officer.
What else did Peter Brady do that we can pretend this guy did?
Didn't he break a vase in the house by playing ball in the house? Was that Peter Brady that did that?
I don't remember.
I don't remember.
That might have been a Bobby move.
Yeah.
Who technically threw the ball or didn't catch the ball? I think it was Peter and Bobby.
All I know is over and over again, they kept like playing that. Mom always said,
don't play ball
in
the
house.
Yeah, the dream sequence.
Jeez. So kids, go watch the Brady Bunch wherever you can find that. I don't know where you can.
My daughter likes the Brady Bunch.
Kalia?
She likes watching it.
I don't know. Couple other little Ted things. He never demonstrates any real knowledge about historical preservation, but an entire season is spent on a storyline where he's dealing with the Arcadian Hotel and its historic value. And, you know, he seems like he's supposed to know all that kind of stuff. And he's, you know, he's making an argument for tearing it down and What else we got? He gives a lecture on bridges because architects, a whole episode. Yeah. It's a whole lecture. He gives an architect, he talks about bridges because architects design bridges.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
How many bridges have you seen designed by architects?
Zero.
James?
I have not seen any bridges.
I have worked with, well, sort of worked with, but met Santiago Calatrava, and he designs bridges, but he's also a civil, a structural engineer.
Yeah,
I worked on a pedestrian bridge, so I guess I just shot that out of the water.
And there was a pedestrian bridge, sort of, on the art museum, but that was, you know, that was Calatrava.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not Calatrava, and I did a pedestrian bridge.
Okay, but not a bridge, not like a long span.
I mean, it was a means of getting from like one place to another across a gap, so it was a bridge. I mean. Alrighty. There you go.
So that's just a little bit of how TV and movies don't really give a crap about what we do for a living.
And we could have gone on and on and on about that. And
well, let me
some might say we did a little.
Yeah. Okay, well, let me add this little tidbit, which you might think is kind of funny. So, you know, I'm in the Army. I'm in the Army Reserve. And I went to some training. And we got, you know, we had to go become part of the, you know, they split us up into teams. And the team I ended up on, you know, was part active Army and part reserve Army. So we kind of got mixed up together. And a lot of the times, like, one thing I can bring to the table is that I'm an architect. You know, I have, you know, some construction knowledge and so forth. And so I get on this team and we're going around, like, you know, talking about our backgrounds and stuff. And one of the active duty guys is an architect. So I was just like, really? You know, like, the one thing... You know, I bring from the civilian, you know, my ace in the hole where people can turn to me and be like, hey, this is a great opportunity.
You are unnecessary.
Yeah. I mean, I was superfluous. I was just like, what the hell, you know, of all the things for this other Army captain to be is he's a freaking architect.
You're a what? Aw.
I was just like, this is Bush League, you know? So anyway. Exactly. So,
all right. So I think that's going to do it.
Yep.
James, thank you.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
No, damn it. Thank you.
Okay. This episode is long enough.
No, Mike, you hang up.
Mike, where can they find us?
Nerdburgershow.com, at Nerdburgershow on Twitter, Nerdburgershow on Facebook. And email us
at nerdburgershow@gmail.com and throw something up there or give us a review on iTunes if you listen over there.
Please.
On the next episode of Nerd Burger, Mike tries to get as far away from Craig as possible by asking his wife, "Will your grace command me any service to the world's end? I will go to the slightest errand now to the Antipodes that you can devise to send me on. I will fetch you a toothpicker now from the furthest inch of Asia, bring you the length of Prester John's foot, fetch you a hair off the great Cham's beard."
I don't know what any of that is.
That's Much Ado About Nothing.
Oh, haha.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Windows 8! Get Bill Gates in here!
Well, alright, man.
Okay.
I will talk to you guys later.
Alright.
Thanks
again
for having me on your podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
Alright, later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I can figure out how to shut this off. Let's see. Alright, I gotta go back to... Okay, here we go. Stupid Windows 8.
F*** you, Steve Ballmer!
Yeah, this shit is bullshit. Alright, I'll talk to you guys later.
Alright, bye.
Bye.